the curious leader. Where do the questions come from?
Let's shape the future with leadership and future skills, such as curiosity, creativity, listening, being boldly human, and meaningful conversations along with good music. Lust auf Zukunft schaffen? Mit Leadership und Future Skills wie Neugier, Kreativität, Zuhören, mutig Mensch sein sowie richtig guten Gesprächen und richtig gute Musik. Los geht's. Off we go.
So why to be this empathetic, this human in a working environment? And what is the return on production, on the production environment that you think of? This is what we can look into. Like the return on investment of you being a human manager or a people-centered manager is definitely will be shown in your dashboards and in your results and in your staff well-being and issues among staff and compliance with ethical behaviors and so many other elements in terms of institutional controls. So yeah, this is how I think about it, you know?
I'm introducing to the audience now Diyadin Bazadou. He's a psychologist. That's my knowledge. And I just ask you to introduce yourself also, because we haven't met actually in about 9 years. We kept in touch on LinkedIn, but we worked together in Jordan in refugee camps around Amman, but actually in whole Jordan. We even traveled together to the camps. And you were one of those really valuable people in the camps that helped us understand what's important there. And I will just never forget our first encounter, which I keep on telling when I'm doing keynotes, because I said, I remember we were performing there and the kids had a blast, and all of a sudden you disappeared after the performance. And then I went in there in your little container, and you were sitting there on the terrace. We called it the terrace, which was actually just a stair open to the air, and you were smoking a cigarette and you had tears in your eyes. And I said, "Oh, what's going on, dear? Did we do something wrong? You were so taken." And I said, no. I have been working with the kids on basic emotions, and they can easily provide hate. They can provide fear. They can anger whatsoever, but they could not recall anything connected to joy.
Yeah.
And you clowns, you came, and within 20 minutes, now I have a reference emotion for them I can work on. And that makes them healable.
Yeah.
So that was welcome, Dia.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for hosting me, Carola. It's good to catch up. After all of these years, and since we had our professional endeavors and there in the camps, and to be honest, that was one of the most unforgettable experiences working as a child psychologist back then. So motivated to help, to do, and it was quite a good time.
So what is leadership? What do you think about it? Questions are crucial. Do they open doors or do they open windows? Do they have a smell and do they have a taste?
But then carrying over from there, so many transitions happened in terms of career, in terms of focus, in terms of secondary trauma you might be exposed to in working with people. And also burning out, because at some point I was doing my work during the day in refugee camps, and then I was volunteering with international missions that comes to Jordan as a clinic team leader to provide psychological first aid and to help adults. So I was just double working here and there because I was passionate about it and I wanted to use the momentum of the context where, yes, you can be actively engaged and you can contribute on all different aspects. But after a while, things change and it's you taking care of you so you can provide more. Neither than for short term, temporarily, you'll provide more, then you lose yourself and start doing harm. So that's where was the main point that I realized that I need just to hold back for a second, re-strategize my career, see how I'm moving forward, and how can I make a bigger impact without burning myself throughout the process. So, yeah, that was that my career had a nice transition, I would say, after that.
Do you sense a question before it emerges? Why don't you help people to let those one inside of them? It's freeing them, letting them out.
Please think of subscribing to the podcast so you don't miss out on any episode. You can do that on karolazakotnik.com or, of course, on any of your favorite platforms for podcasts.
Then my last year with WFP, which was 2023-2024, I was still managing field operations, but also the office seeing that I need also to re-employ my master's studies, my protection skills, my gender skills into a structured programmatic approach. So they gave me the role of being a gender and protection focal point where I review M&D frameworks, I review programs, I collaborate with program colleagues to fix and adjust some of our programs and operations. And then I was called by the emergency team to be deployed for the Sudan emergency in Eastern Chad. Chad is like a very harsh country. It's the second lowest on the Global Development Index. I think it's still there at Sudan. South Sudan is the first one. So for me, I was, if I'm going to help, I'll go. So on a very like short notice, I'd say. I said, yes, I'm going. And I went there. I stayed there for 3 months, applying and implementing my protection and accountability capacities. So people were running from we are just 10 kilometers from southern Darfur. So people were fleeing violence. Most of them are women and children. And I was the one with colleagues who are managing the field operations to set up measures to ensure they are protected. They are listened to, their voices are heard and acted upon in that emergency, as well as like developing some trends of issues, concerns within the population. So after that, I returned to Jordan. I just maintained my role as gender and protection officer, let's say. And due to also challenges and stuff, there was a organizational realignment where field operations were not needed anymore. So I only focused on gender and protection. I built theories of change, gender theories of change that looked in a different, I would say, innovative approach at the time, which was, I think, 5-6 months ago, where I focused on institutional development. And the second one focused on programmatic adjustments. So after my experiences, I understood that introducing a change does not necessarily or strictly require the willingness or the passion to take the change up and move it forward. But it also, you need an enabling environment to accommodate changes and to have it prospering within any given context. And they're not only like within international organizations, but in any endeavor, like changes, they are shocks to a stable system. So if you don't have the minimal capacity to comprehend, accommodate, feed this change and make it grow, it's a gender difference. And now also with funding issues and organizational alignments, I decide that...
Thea just dropped out. Yeah, it was just one sentence. If you could repeat that, what you said, because you said change does not take only passion, but it also takes, or foremost, a welcoming, nurturing environment. You need to accommodate change and?
You need to accommodate change and feed it, you know?
Feed it, yeah.
All the way. And you are the responsible one to make it grow and prosper.
Yeah.
Just relaxing a little bit. I had my relaxing time actually for 3 months now. And now I'm back into full active mood, trying to see where can I contribute more, yeah? How can I do more, not only in but also in the normal context, understanding staff relations, workplace well-being, environments, These are all elements that I've been exposed to throughout my career and where I can probably influence, probably contribute, probably offer small briefings to my friends and my circle on how just to make the most.
Yeah, also how to make the most out of their efforts, no?
Exactly.
Yeah, I think what you're saying is really valuable. And I have always in my years now been wondering how to implement the knowledge from the refugee camps, which is a very, very specific and a very human knowledge. It's so deeply human that I was always very taken by it. And I always try to find a comparison or to find a bridge.
Svegli e lo sai, sta cosa è stata grave ieri, ma ora che ne parlai, ti giri nel tuo letto, ci pensi forte, lo sai, ma non ti viene niente che ti potrebbe salvare, dai. Ed io ti dico, abbraccia pure ore, abbraccialo forte, stringite lo cuore, scopri che non ne ancora ne sai. Abbraccia pure ore, abbraccialo forte, stringite lo cuore, scopri che non ne ancora ne sai. Stuzzicarlo, lo sai che ti farà dei guai, e nello stesso tempo ne trovi una gemma che non aspettavi mai. Ci bisogna lasciarla ancora dal ruvido, bellezza ne farai, ma sviluppa pure quel tratto di vedere bellezza nei guai. Ed io ti dico, abbraccia pure ore, abbraccialo forte, stringite al cuore, scopri che non ne ancora ne sai. Abbraccia pure ore, abbraccialo forte, stringite al cuore, scopri che non ne ancora ne sai. Abbraccia pure l'errore,
lasciala forte, stringiti al cuore, scopri che non è ancora ne sai. Abbraccia pure l'errore, abbraccialo forte, stringiti al cuore, scopri che non è ancora ne sai. Abbraccia pure l'errore, abbraccialo forte, stringiti al cuore, scopri che non ne ancora ne sai. Abbraccia pure l'errore, abbraccialo forte, stringiti al cuore, scopri che non ne ancora ne sai.
So the bridge, you know, how to implement that knowledge from people who are definitely on edge moments in their lives, because they're home, they left something, they're going to a new life, but they haven't arrived there. And this transition time sometimes is very, very long. The difference is just you can feel physically safe, hopefully, not always even that. So what the insight is, what I saw there is a huge humanity, also a huge, supporting each other, but also a huge fighting for the own life, for the own environment, for the own safety, for the own well-being, and especially fighting just for the own and not for the whole, not for the community, is a comparison I can make to business. The way capitalism is built, it's a lot about fighting for your own benefit, for your company's benefit, but it's always very individualized or very egocentric. And I think the future needs something else. The future needs something like an awareness of your own needs, like you said, you know, on every level, like not contributing too much without burning, you know, like contributing a lot, not burning out.
Yeah.
Also knowing where you are, how you can nurture yourself. I think this is where you have always to start every day. You start with yourself. That's the only resource you have in the end. So you need to nurture this resource. And then go on and contribute something for the greater good. And for companies, in order to live longer, they need to have a decent turnover. They need to have, good numbers in the sense, not only turnover, but also wins. How to do that, you know, and what you're saying is actually that inspires me, how to make the most yeah. out of efforts of everyone contributing.
Yes, it's very interesting to talk about it. And, you know, like me and you in the past brainstorming conversation on complex issues, say, between refugee population, or actually I'll tell you the similarities I see it as an individual. It's not evidence-based, but my experience and my reflection on it. It's whether it's a refugee population, whether it's sport competitiveness, competitive team members, or gym, or a club, or, you know, like any community that we're targeting. What I sensed that people of collective struggle, they develop similar patterns towards responding to their main primary needs. Yeah. That's in a refugee context. It's survival. By developing this pattern, they lose their priority over than similarity and contribution to autonomy. Yeah? It's a whole community that moves together when there is a collective struggle. So if everyone shared displacement, our collective struggle now is to survive. The intra-community dynamic between different individuals may not necessarily be seen as they will kill each other over food. Yeah. It's let's collaborate together and find job. Let's raise our voices. Let's protest. Let's, and so many other stuff. So looking at this in a different perspective, let's say in a different group that are not refugees, normal group within a company, I would say my own individual perspective, is that each individual, definitely they have their own goals and their own survival. Yeah. Within this fish bank, they need to survive. For people, survival may mean a continued progression. People who feel like dinosaurs may die, and like it's figuratively speaking, but may not produce anymore. Specific patterns could be identified amongst people who are curious, as you said, amongst people who are lazy, you know, and so on. So looking at the differences between them, you will see them wide and too far from each other's, but it's not completely contextual or relevant to their environment. Could be a benchmark or a spark to developing the intended pattern that you will be looking at in towards building positive outcomes, let's say. And this is the hard part. What is the element that everyone in the room would agree that, yes, we might need it, but on so many different levels? There are the greedy people may need, let's say, a half day incentive, yeah, like half day off. Other people will use it as a huge privilege. Other people will use it as a huge appreciation. It's about the perception, but it's a small collective element. It might be differentiated in terms of interpretation by each individual, but at least it's there. And it's the point of contact and point of connection. So this is my own opinion, you know, and this is how when I look at a refugee community, whether in emergency context or a different context, what I understood is that there is a need eventually. You need something. And my role is to provide. And my need as Dia back then was that I need a fulfilling job and a meaningful mission in life. The moment I lose it and I work behind closed desks and I'll feel that I'm losing the momentum and I'm losing the time, my age and my energy. So it's a mutual give and take, you know, but it's different. And always for me, it was very, very important in the field is to have like the ground level perspective, like from any individual. I'll sit next to them. I'll try to experience features of their lives. I'll try to learn, observe here and there to know how can I better integrate. And I'm integrating for their own benefit, yeah? And my meaningful and mission and reward. So this is my own just personal reflection on it.
That's great.
Hearing or listening or sensing, what the leader needs.
And where do you put your own curiosity in this context? Do you have it? Did it feed you? Did it help you to develop, to see?
Yes. I think it's me trying to understand and catch up. You know, day in and day out, human experiences change. It's not me today, you know, I've experienced different elements from yesterday to today. So I was always drawn and keen to learn on how the individual works on accepting, like we have some fixated traits amongst ourselves, but how can we just withdraw some stuff, drop some elements and take your elements and rebuild with so many multiple layers. When you look at it, like in terms of example, it's like a cake with a layer all above each other that creates uniqueness. But after my different reflections, we're talking about something that is so dynamically transformative. It's a one-on entity. It transforms, you know, within itself in shape, in nature, in energy, and all of that. So my curiosity was always about learning more, how to better integrate. How am I interacting with a context or an environment? What do I take and what do I leave? And I had my own, you know, one-person stand-up meetings to put myself in check wherever I feel that I'm not corrected. And it's a full-on project. Like, I self-monitor it. I have my own early warning systems, you know, my own individual early warning systems that I'm deviating. And yeah,
it's nice.
That's where curiosity
is. I like it. I like it also, the self-reflection, like a self-monitoring meeting. I like also that thing, to be curious about how I, you know, to put it into context. It's not about how do others work, but how do I work in context in with others, correlating with others. What does that do also to me, but also what does it do to them? I love it a lot. Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child, a long way from home. Sometimes
What role did trust play for you?
Trust in the environment and the agents of the environment, or trust in myself fitting within an like it depends how it's defined, I'd say, in the context of our reflection. Trust is, like, for me, in environment agents, is built on shared experiences and shared knowledge. What is the product of any other human interaction that I carry? They have a purpose and I have a purpose. We both have goals and outcomes of any individual and human interaction. That's my own opinion. It could be emotional. It could be financial. It could be social, you know? And for me, it's the same. If someone makes me happy, I have this as an investment. So if they give me happiness, I'll start trusting them that they are delivering on the outcomes of our human interaction. Yeah. So this is how I perceive it. It's, you know, it's a give and take. It's an interest-based relationship. And the norm is that we always translate interest in the capitalist vision or perspective. No, it's not. My interest is to talk to Carol, like, you're my friend. I'll have positive feelings of talking with you and you'll have the same. So we are building on this grounds and we are just amplifying our interests. So that's how it comes, you know, with my managers, with my colleagues, Nana, all of that. For me, mistrust is the biggest cause of disappointment and frustration and lack of productivity and burnout in any working context and normal context. Because if I miss to identify the outcome of my interactions or the intended outcomes and results of my interactions, I'm setting myself up to failure or unrealistic goals. And then I'll less likely take the responsibility that this was my fault. You know, I'll just play a victim. Yeah, it just went south, and I'll be frustrated it wasn't achieved. So it's more of a self-awareness, you know, self-awareness, how you built what you want to grow. When you doesn't like it, like you don't talk to them, don't like as a person or as a personality, not as a person. And we just don't align and we have a working relationship where they deliver and contribute to my success, I'll definitely trust them. Trust is not like like it has its emotional feature, you know, it's a project, it's an endeavor to be built. It's a whole skeleton that you need to keep giving out to it. I hope I'm not like diverting and being so thoughtful about the elements of the topic.
No, it's great actually, because it's so, you know, especially now talking about, I was counting actually I think the last mission I came back from Jordan was right before my 50th birthday. It was the day before, and this was the 30th January in 2015. Now we have again January in 2025, like 10 years later. I'm turning 60 at the end of this month. And I was not aware actually that it was 10 years. And for me, what I realized after leaving this refugee work, which I still think is one of the most insightful and fulfilling works I've ever done, was to find or to harvest my own value. Not because I did not believe in myself, but I could not position myself anymore where I would fit, or where my expertise, my knowledge, my experiences can contribute outside of this, bringing joy and laughter to people in need, you know, dire situations. And I can just imagine now when you tell me that, like your way of reflecting and the way you saw things, the way you experienced things and the way you could positively benefit to these things. And now you feel it, that it's good to transition into different, area of work, in a different area of contribution, like on the same path. What is the value you can bring? Like, not doubting that there is value, but where is the value the others can really take out something of that? And the way you're really reflecting is trust in fitting within, yes, of course, but mistrust, the biggest source of disappointment. Yes, it is. And still mistrust, especially in business environments, is a big thing. even though good business can be done only with trusting each other. Because you make an agreement, then you can write it down or not. If you don't fulfill what you agreed at, or agreed of, it will not happen. You know, no business will be made, actually.
Remember my name, oh sister. We two of our kind, so sister. I'm keeping my eye on you. I bet you think you don't know nothing, but singing the blues, but sister, have I got news for you, so sister? I hope that you know something too. Scuffy, I've been up the lonesome road and seen a lot of suns going down. Trust me, I'm not gonna see you around. But let me tell you something, sister. Remember your name, no twister. It's gonna steal your love away or something. We sure ain't got a whole lot of time. See a lot of suns going down. Trust me, no one's gonna steal you around. I bet you think I don't know nothing. Remember your name, no twister. It's gonna steal your stuff away, oh sister. We sure and have a lot of time. So shake your shimmy, sister, sure as autumn is fine. Bye, bye, bye.
And the question is, the big questions are nowadays, what you said, how can you build what you want to grow? It's actually the question, the main question every business is asking at the moment. How can you do that? And I think it's so great the way you describe it. You know, you worked in a people business, or you still do, and I also do that. And when I see my consultant colleagues, I see the difference a big difference between people who work or who consult and a company who facilitate in the production environment. So you want people to perform a good production, or in the people business where you want to handle or to live, to work with people who are handling people to bring out their best, to perform well whatsoever. And I think this is one thing that I just hear, that this knowing about people and what they bring is so valuable. And I think you have that. And what you're also used to is working with people. And I always say activating them to do motivated work, even in very, very pressuring environments.
Yeah.
Yeah. You never work in relaxed environments. It doesn't matter if it's a community center for people in need, or if it's in Sudan, it does not. I mean, it makes a difference of the pressure level, of course. but this is your expertise, that you work with people who need to work on the pressure. And if I ask you that, how would you say, how does it work best to work with people who have to work under pressure? How do you guide them? How do you lead them?
Yeah, so basically, I would start by defining what success is for each individual. And in my own brief, I'd say, and humble experience, interviewing people, hiring people, working with staff and working with managers under my supervision and under them staff, I have made so many mistakes that I learned from, you know, and I tried to improve and introduce innovative ways and so on. So like one of the simplest examples could be when you meet someone for an interview, they are under stress and they tend to either over or under or miss represent themselves. That's not the real them. Yeah. So we're, let's say if I went to this interview and I've done bad in it on the scale of the hiring manager, my friend will come and tell me, man, like they're lucky to have you. You're like the best. You are because he has this in-depth knowledge about my qualifications and so on. So when I'm working with people's staff, let's say, or colleagues, what I focus on first, I look into what success is defined for them. You know, there are some people that they are top main success is coming on early and leaving on early, meeting the family after work. That's success.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that should not necessarily be a work-related success. But this is how it is interpreted for them. Some other people, success for them are systematic, you know? Like they know that I want to finish 1 year on a successful performance here, and then I want to do this and I want to do that. So they have some vision. It might be blurry and so constantly changing, but they have this systematic, analytical self trait. Yeah. And here we're not talking like about senior executives or what I focus on. One of my experience, my role with my last work experience, I had I had around 18 staff. Yeah. Who were supposed to transition to a whole new unit corresponding with the competence needed for them to perform well in their upcoming roles.
Ah, he did a dropout. Doesn't matter. Oh, it's actually a very, very interesting way to catch up and to reflect on a meta level on all these experiences you have when you work with people who are in extreme life situations. Here he is.
Oh my God, I'm really...
Doesn't matter. I just, you know, you started, you had these 18 staff and you chose them. And like if a friend would say, you're the best, they are lucky to have you. I also agree with that. What did you do with your staff?
So with them in this transitional period, I've introduced a mock interview exercise where I have developed the main leadership pillars corresponding with the competency required for them to perform successfully on their new roles, you know? And I have run a full-on exercise for 11 staff who were interested in attending. The other 7, they didn't want to attend. And I asked them questions and I took their answers, and then I took each individual answer and I rewrote it in a way to make them know how to present themselves better. You know, after 3 years experience, I know their strengths and weaknesses. I applied for them like the STAR model, how to do this, this, this and that. And I didn't have any supervisory role anymore for them, but I had like some short time to do this exercise and I have done it. out of the 11, 9 people successfully landed the roles they wanted, like the transitional roles. And they took on the feedback. And, you know, it was just my initiative to let them know how contributing they could be to the level of competence required of them. So, yeah, it's, do you know, like, there are people, let's say I had amongst my students more than all the others, and I had someone with more historical engagement with the place and inherited reputation than others. So I had to tailor to each one's situation. Yeah. And what does they take pride in? You know, you'll find someone will tell you, yeah, I've been working here for 10 years. No. That's his sole confidence. Yeah. Security, maybe. Maybe trust and success. So the diversity.
Oh, I hear you.
Some others will tell you, you know, I don't care to the environment that I don't care about. I want my salary end of the month.
Oh, that's great. For the trust, there's the confidence coming in. What I hear, what you do naturally is listening.
Mm.
You don't do it only just because you're curious, or you don't do it only just because it's a professional trait, but you seem to listen deeply. What person is this? Makes you invent then measurement.
That's a very important trait for me.
Yes. Because I think, you know, I'm constantly, so just for you to understand, I'm constantly in this podcast also, I'm constantly asking people about their leadership philosophies, about also trying to give them good questions so everyone just doesn't share with the world what their insights is or their secrets are, but also maybe to have an insight upon yourself, because usually you don't reflect on your leadership with someone else. So, and when I'm good, I said one of my traits is that I can ask good questions, and that the questions come to me. And I think what I hear for you is, or with you, you for yourself, is that listening seems to be one of your most important leadership skills. And I also think it's one of the most important ones.
Smile, though your heart is breaking. Smile, even though it's aching. When there are clouds in the sky, you'll get by. Smile, through your fear and sorrow. Smile, maybe tomorrow you see the sun comes shining through for you. Light up your face with gladness, hide every trace of sadness. Although a tear may be ever so near, that's the time you must keep on trying. Smile, what's the use of crying? You see, the life is still worthwhile. Smile, smile, though your heart is breaking. Smile, even though it's aching. When there are clouds in the sky, you'll get by. Smile, through your fear and sorrow. Smile, maybe tomorrow you see the
the sun comes shining through for you. Light up your face with gladness, hide every trace of sadness. Although a tear may be ever so near, that's the time you must keep on trying. Smile, what's the use of crying? You see, the life is still worthwhile if you smile.
It's definitely important. Like it's completely important and could be easily. It's a very thin line between you effectively use it and misuse it, you know, because by listening also you're implying a nonverbal message that, yeah, and I'm opening up the space. So it's you're not proactively invading personalities. But people are opening up and you are held to account about the things you hear and you listen to and the things you understand. So by listening, there is a very important element, which is your individual bias for any content or a flow of information. If you are able to listen objectively, that would be the top best. But eventually we're human beings, you know. If I hate the color green and someone came to me and told me, you know, like my problem is that I love green so much and I will not be able to help it. That I'll feel my unintentional subconscious, you know, bias. And I had it at some point, to be honest. I had an issue with a performing colleague under my supervision, and I stopped at one point and I told my senior manager, like, I can't do it. You know, it's not a lack of my capacity. It's me being self-aware that I'm not going to be able to do it fairly and squarely, as you say. So I told you, like, I've done so many mistakes like by managing people since 2015 and on. And eventually it was, for me, a meaningful experience looking at those very important elements. And especially, just a small reflection, Carola, and relevant to your previous question, was the pressuring environment. What we know as the duals, that me as Dia, if I work in a pressuring environment, at least at my best, I'm 3 times more sensitive than the normal me. Yeah, I'm 3 times more alerted. I'm 3 times more emotional. I'm 3 times more. Like for me as Dia, this is my own estimation of multiplied sensitivity. So people working in pressuring environment, you need to actually believe, not uphold like this idea, but to actually believe that they are not their own selves. They are not their own personalities. Those are agents of production, agents for production, agents for performance. But they are not themselves in their normal, regular environments. People working in high-pressuring environment, what was the most useful thing to me to do with them is to remind them about their human elements. You know? No. Let's kick it, grab a beer. Let's kick it, have a lunch. You know? Let's talk about anything. You know, today I've done some sport. Want to engage with me in that? I've watched this stand-up comedy, you know, let's have a movie night, let's have whatever, in the very most, you know, in that emergency. And we had the bond, even after now everyone in a different country, we had like a very strong bond because you were the one, like, reminding each other about our human element. Mm-hmm. We usually perceive it as weak, but it's not, you know, you can perform, but I can bring, like, after years, a robot can do my job, you know, my technical capacities. They can do them. The only thing that will not be replaced is your individual experience, uniqueness, and reflection on the human context you're interacting with and the group you are part of. So that was one. And people are easily incentivized in high pressuring environment when incentives are used correctly, you know, and also tailored individual thinking about each person could be also helpful in some applicable environments, not when you have like 200-300 staff, I would say, for the lease, but for the scale of 10, 15, 20, I was able to do an individualized relationship strategies, you know, with each one of them. And this is my own work, you know, you're not required to, because as a manager, you have the authority, you have the power, and you like your decisions can't be suspected unless by the person who's higher than you. So how can you let go this ego and this delegation and remember that even people like lesser than you in terms of grade and maybe experience still could bring a good critique to what you think is right? So that was always an area of, I told you, like this self stand-up meetings, like every day at work with myself, you know, self-monitoring every once in a while. Those are very, very important. And it's for your own sake, you know. Some people that are rigidly managing, they'll do their job and retire happily, like after 60, 50 years. This works and that works as well. And so many different methods work. So why to be this empathetic, this human in a working environment? And what is the return on production, on the production environment that you think of? This is what we can look into. Like the return on investment of you being a human manager or a people-centered manager is definitely will be shown in your dashboards and in your results and in your staff well-being and issues among staff and compliance with ethical behaviors and so many other elements in terms of institutional controls. So yeah, this is how I think about it, you know.
Well, I can just say for the podcast, I say a lot of thank you, because this last sentence was like sentences were such big insights that I think we are really good here. And thank you very, very much. It's Dia Bazadu, a leader in the, actually in the first aid humanitarian crisis help, working on both sides, a psychologist on one hand and an operational administrator on the other hand. And I think these insights are just great, because it's all about what you just said now, the return on investment of being a human-centered manager. That's what I think we should think of in order to create a future in a world worth living. So thank you for that.
Thank you very much, Carol. Appreciate it.
Stop being blind.
Das war's auch schon für heute. Enough for today. You can listen to me and my guests again each month, every fourth Tuesday at 7 p.m. at Radio Agora. And then the next day you find me and my guests with the podcast Lust auf Zukunft, Growing Culture on all major platforms. Du kannst mich und meine Gäste jeden vierten Dienstag im Monat auf Radio Agora hören und ab dem Tag darauf als Podcast Lust auf Zukunft, Growing Culture auf allen großen Plattformen. Curious? Neugierig? Zum Beispiel auf Keynotes, Coaching, Events, Creative Work and more? Go to carolasakotnik.com.